You got to just keep pushing and be a little crazy and face those fears. And it's scary, but do it anyway. Feel the fear and face it anyway. Like, the fear is not an excuse.
This is Chapters, a podcast dedicated to exploring our story. Who am I and what am I meant to be doing in this world? Perhaps through listening, understanding, questioning, we better understand our own story.
Hi, Sarala.
Hey, Hannah.
I'm such a fan of you. I have to say that you've impacted so many of my friends' lives, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, friends that you've changed their lives from when they were young girls my age. I remember as a little girl, they were always running to Sarala. I'm like, who's this Sarala? I want to move to Dover Heights just so I can come to your house. And then when I got older, I would always drive past like Glick's, what's it called nowadays? Bagel and Co. And always see you sitting with people in the community and always making events. And I always thought, like, when I grow up, I want to be like Sarala. And this is a true story. And you're just so real and normal. And I remember one time, just some random story, that we were at Sippy Castells and you were laughing and making jokes. You were being so real about like your shluchas and your life. And I was like, I just want to be like Sarala. Like, you have the ability to be so real, so normal, so honest and candid about your struggles and who you are as a person, but so inspiring. So I want to say thank you so much for being here, because I'm a fan and I only interview people that really inspire me. So thank you for being here.
Wow, thank you. That's so generous. But honestly, I feel a lot of the same for you. I just feel like wherever you go, you spread a little bit of your fairy dust and a little bit of magic. And it's just nice how you sort of float into Sydney for a little bit. We get to connect and then you go on and carry on and spread your magic somewhere else. So keep being you. Love
it. Thank you. I love Sydney. But, you know, sometimes you got to have your journey and then hopefully it always leads back to home. Sarala, you've lived here for 14 years, and in the past 14 years, you've made an incredible dent impact in this community. It's undeniable. You're a cornerstone in this community in your own way, just by being you, by being real, by being normal. I think that's what people crave in this town. And you how many years were you the director of Dover Heights Youth? The youth director?
Yeah. So soon after my husband and I got married, we moved to Sydney. That was 14 years ago.
Wow.
And we spent 12 years in Dover Heights Shore running youth and young adult engagement, engaging with families. And it was the most beautiful experience and really helped me like shape who I am today.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then in the past 2 years, you opened Abraham's Tent, which is an organization. I'm gonna let you explain what it is, but essentially we never had that in Sydney. There were so many people that were going in and out of hospitals and not having adequate emotional support, spiritual support, physical support. I have family members that have received aid, food, support, and recently Tom each got an apartment, which actually aids families and or they'd be able to go to the hospital and meet their loved ones, because Randwick is not around the corner and people are making long treks just to meet their families that are suffering. And you started Abraham's Tent. I love the name because your last name is Abrams and your name is Sarah and AC's Avram, and I love it, and it's so beautiful and so foundational, especially as an Abrahamic people. I think it's very pertinent and it's incredible what you've done in this short 2 years, because I came back to Sydney and everyone's talking about Sarah, like Abraham's Tent, and you're on Randwick and everyone's walking an hour to Randwick to come to your house for Shabbos to meet my friend. She's like, oh yeah, I just came back from Randwick. I'm like, what are you doing in Randwick? She's like, Sarah. So thank you for everything you do in this Jewish community. So our podcast is called Chapters, and the reason why I called it Chapters is because I think that every single person is a story, and we all make up one huge storybook of humanity, of our stories, of what we've experienced in our lives. And I think everything we are today is because of where we come from. So I would like you, if you wouldn't mind, taking us back to where you're from, your childhood, and how that really impacted the person you are today.
Sure. So I grew up in London, England, as one of 12 children. I'm the 11th child.
Wow.
And, you know, I've got to say that I feel very, very blessed and lucky that I grew up with the parents and in the home I did. Because as you're growing up as a child, there's lots of things that you just take for granted and think that's just normal because that's how you grow up. But then as you get older and you sort of begin to make your own journey and meet other families and travel, you see how homes are quite different. And it was only as I got older that I realized that there were some very special and unique things about my parents' home. And one of those was that we had a complete open home. Like, we had people staying, people eating all the time. I mean, in some ways it was like a train station, to the point that, like, I was so well trained in, like, this is how it is, that I'll never forget this funny story. I was once walking with a friend on the street, and it was Friday afternoon, like an hour or two before Shabbos, and these two Israeli guys stopped us and they said, hey, in Hebrew, like, do you know where the local Beit Chabad is? And I said, without blinking, I was just like, gave my address. And as we walked off, my friend looked at me and she's like, are you insane? You literally just gave your home address to some strangers on the street. Why didn't you give them, like, the Chabad shul address? And I was like, well, nobody stays there and no one's going to be there now an hour or two before Shabbos. Anyway, long story short, that friend ended up staying with me for Shabbos. And when we came down Shabbos morning to the breakfast table, these two guys were sitting at the table. And my friend looks at them and she goes, hey, aren't you the guys we met on the street yesterday? And they were like, yeah, are you guys guests staying here too? And we just had a good laugh. But that's how I grew up. I grew up in a home where all Jews were welcome. We had some very interesting characters through our home. But there was, you know, my parents didn't have a tremendous amount of money. But it wasn't about that. It was just whatever we have, we're happy to share and all are welcome. And I think that, like, that strong sort of, like, foundation really gave me that feeling of, like, you know, wherever I go, trying to include all the Jews around us, trying to make an impact, trying to live for, like, a greater good, a greater purpose. You know, of course, my parents were also, you know, very big into, like, shluchas, and my mother did challah bakes, and, you know, there's so much I could say, but I think that that is probably the single largest impact, the home and the openness that I experienced and that I thought was totally normal, and only realized, like, years later and when I started hosting myself, how, like, it's actually hard to have people in your home all the time and in your space and all different kinds of people and, you know, what that takes from people running a home. So, yeah.
Wow. So I know you and AC have, like, a love story. You guys grew up in the same neighbors?
Pretty much. His sister's my best friend, so.
Wow, that's really special. So you grew up in the same town. Did you know you were going to move to Sydney when you guys met? Because wasn't AC here before?
That's right. So AC was a bacha in yeshiva here. And while he was there, he, on the weekends, used to go help out Dover Heights Shul with a friend of his. And he loved Sydney. He loved Dover Heights. He really, like, was, like, fell in love with this city. And it's hard not to. And, you know, we knew each other a long time. And, yeah, it's a long love story, but that's for another time. But when we really dated to marry, he said, you know, if, like, Sydney, if I ever get an offer, like, I'm there in a second. Are you keen? And I was like, oh, I'll go wherever you go. Young and naive. And
how old were you guys?
I was 21. AC was 25. And I remember we got married in New York and we set our apartment up there and we were married 6 weeks. And I just remember, like, you know, I was, like, hanging up the clock and you're just, like, settling sort of. And we got a call you know, from Dover Heights to say, do you want to come out? And what happened was, we just tried it first for the Chagim, for Tishrei, and I also loved the city. I loved the community. It was the warmest, most just beautiful community. I just saw so much potential, and I was like, I'd be mad not to do it. And that was, wow, you know, the beginning of it. And now Sydney is so home. Like, there's nowhere else I want to be other than Jerusalem with Mashiach. But, like, this is home for us.
Wow. So you moved here. You started working as a youth director in Dover Heights. What were your first impressions? What was it like being here? Were there moments where you're like, I just want to go back home to England? What was it like to live in Sydney and realize that you're so far away from your family and understand really what it means to be a shlucha?
So I think there was definitely hard moments, and particularly in the first few years, it is really far and it's expensive and you're missing a lot of simchas. And even though I would try, make an effort to get to what I could, you know, when you're part of a big family, there's always something happening. And a lot of my family do live in the States, so they would get together, and, you know, that was definitely hard. But I will say that the, like, enrichment, the feeling I got from fulfilling my shluchas and being in my role, really, I think that joy and that, like, inner knowing gave me a lot of peace, even on the harder days when, you know, I was missing things or missing family and all that. I do remember that once I went to New York and I was particularly feeling, like, a bit despondent and far and just like, you know, I don't know, like, is this worth it? Am I really making an impact? And just a cute little story. I haven't really told many people, but I remember I went to the IL, to the Rebbe's resting place, and I wrote to the Rebbe and I said, you know, like, I feel like I'm just anybody. I don't know. Like, am I making a difference? Is there a reason I'm living so far? Like, what's the point of the whole thing? I was kind of, I guess I was just feeling a little out of it. And I said to the Rebbe, like, I would really appreciate if you could help me feel like it's worth it. And I was like pretty emotional. Anyway, as I came out of the, I put my letter in, I davened, I said to him everything. As I came out, you know, there's a video of like the Rebbe talking. And the Rebbe was having a Verbrengen with a bunch of senators and different important people. And the Rebbe suddenly took his cup and he said, Senator Abrahams, make l'chaim. Wow. Senator Abraham, make l'chaim. You should know that you're an enormous influence to your friends and the people around you, and you should keep going from strength to strength. I'm like loosely, I may have misquoted a word or two, but that was in essence the message. And obviously wow. I was just in tears and I was like, I get it, Rebbe. Okay, I'm good. I'm ready to go back to my post and continue my shlachas. And, you know, as much as I feel like me and Asa, we've tried to give everything we can to our shlachas then and to our shlachas now, I feel like I've gotten so much more. As a person, all my growth and the joy and the fulfillment and the meaning in my life, like, I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. And I think, like, as I say, as much as we've been given back so much more.
Wow. So you mentioned the word, like, influence and being a shlocha and being a role model in the community. And I think, like, I've been in that situation where, like, you've given your whole life to this community and you're always on display and people are always looking up to you. How do you maintain, like, we live in Sydney, we live in a normal city, and you're still a human being with your own, like, it comes to mind, like, Human and Holy, it's the name of a podcast that I love, but Human and Holy, how do you maintain that sense of, like, self, but also living, but also maintaining that influence in the community and being a role model?
So I think, like, for me, I decided pretty early on that I'm just going to be me, and I'm not going to be something I'm not, because I think then that is very stressful to keep up a certain image or persona. So, like, those that know me just know me as me with my struggles. I try to just, like, own it and, like, say myself. I'm on a journey myself. I'm not where I want to be, and I'm evolving and growing. And, you know, there's a lot of shluchas that are much more sneers and much more chassidish and much more everything they need to be. But, you know, I feel like at the end of the day, Hashem put me where I need to be. And I just, as long as I'm on a path of growing and evolving, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with that. I'm not yet at where maybe I should be. Do you know what I'm saying? I do think that in terms of influence and the community, the only time I really struggled and found it really, really difficult was more, it wasn't so much like on a Yiddishkeit level, it was more when my mother was quite unwell. I used to live in Rose Bay, which was just very busy. And, you know, I found it hard as a community leader to go out. And if I wasn't feeling up for socials and interacting and feeling really positive and it wasn't a great day, I struggled with that, because I think that, like, as a community leader, you have a responsibility to always greet people warmly and positively. And generally, this is not hard for me. It's, like, sort of part of my nature. But obviously, through that hard time, that was, like, particularly, I'd say, challenging for me. But again, that's part of my journey and part of my work and part of what Hashem set for me. So, you know, I think I'm a work in progress and I'm owning that. And, you know, a lot of people relate to that because they feel like they're also a work in progress. We're all humans going through our journey and trying to better ourselves and evolve. And so, yeah, I guess that's how I look at influence wise.
I think from, like, that relatability point of view, I think the fact that you let us all in, like, just from social media, just from seeing you, like, we all knew your mom was unwell. We were all davening. We were all along on the journey with you. And I think I wasn't, like, in the Dover Heights community, but you were very vocal on social media. And I think that made everyone feel that when they saw you, they understood and they could relate, because everyone knows what it means to go through loss and everyone can empathize. And everyone felt like we all were with you on that journey. So I want to say thank you for, like, I guess, sharing it with all of us and being so open. Because I think that's one of the things that I'm a very open person, but a lot of people are scared to be open. A lot of people are fear, but you really are, you always feel like you can be yourself. And I think that's something that's always really inspired me to go out there and not really care what people think. From the outside, it doesn't seem like you really care what people think. I know everyone a little bit cares what people think. So I was wondering, like, how do you do that? How do you maintain a persona of just like, I'm doing my thing, and if this is who I am, and just having that balance of being like, this is who I am and put myself out there, and what everyone has to say doesn't really, is not really going to shape my actions and the steps I take in my life.
Well, I will say that I find Sydney particularly to be really healing in that way. I grew up in a more, you know, there's lots of positive things about the community I grew up in, but it was sort of more of an older, more judgmental sort of vibe. And I really didn't like that. It was something that was very hard for me, that I felt very judged by exterior and by silly things that I didn't believe were really important. And one of the really beautiful healing things about coming to Sydney was I felt that Sydney was, like, as a community, people were generally not very judgmental and were much more respectful and open. And that was extremely healing for me, like coming to Sydney and realizing I can be who I am and just like own that, and people kind of let you be who you are. And I think that also over the years, you know, I've learned that not everyone has to like me, and I'm okay with that. Like, I think as I was younger, it would bother me so much if I felt someone didn't like me or judged me. And at this point, it's like, that's not really my work. That's not really my business. My business is like what goes on in my mind. And obviously, if I've done something wrong, to own it and to apologize. But other than that, it's not my job to worry about other people's judgments and, you know, what they're thinking about others. That's not my role. My role is to, you know, if there is an issue, try to work on that issue and make it better. But I'm not in somebody else's head, and that's not my role. And I try to just not get stuck in that whole cycle. Like, life is too busy, too full. Just don't waste time on those, like, silly, you know, issues.
So true. And I think because you are strong in what you believe in and your mission, that has pushed you to do something that I think not many people in the community would have the guts to do, which is opening up Abraham's Tent. And I was wondering if you could walk us through it. What is Abraham's Tent, and how did it come about? And yeah.
Okay. So in general, whilst we were working at Dover Heights Shul, we supported a lot of families through the good and bad of life. So obviously there was bat mitzvahs, all the simchas, babies, all of that was amazing. But as life is, there was family crisis, there was hospitalizations, there was death, there was all that too. And during that time, we noticed that there was very minimal support around the hospitals. And I had lived in London, I'd lived in New York, I've seen like Bikkur Haylem's hospital support around the world. And it was something that we mentioned, my husband and I, a few times over the years. Like, it's pretty interesting that there's not much set up in Sydney. Like, you know, it exists in almost all, you know, Jewish community cities around the world. Why doesn't Sydney have this? And even Melbourne has something. And, you know, we'd say, like, someone should do it. Someone should totally open it. I'm sure there's a young couple, right? We probably said someone should do it, like, three or four times over the years as we noticed that the support was needed. Anyway, fast forward to COVID and then my mother becoming unwell. I'll say, sorry, before that, my mother-in-law actually became very unwell around 10 years ago, 11 years ago, a whole journey with her. And unfortunately, she passed around 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really difficult because we were here. She was in London. You know, there's limits to what you can do. We try to fly back and forth, but it was really tough. And we were very, very grateful because there was an organization in London that was extremely supportive to the family. And like really amazing, like things like bringing a hospital bed into the house, to like therapies, to emotional support, to food, cleaning help, like really unbelievable. And we were just so grateful at the time because, you know, you feel as it is so helpless, but especially when you're across the world and there's really limits to what you can do.
It's not like a simple thing to get on a plane and come to Sydney, or like get on a plane and go to London and feel like a mother is unwell. Like, that must be it's painful.
It's very painful and very stressful, and we were just so grateful for that, you know. And then fast forward a few years, it was COVID. My own mother became unwell, which was like a massive shock to us. I mean, my mother is like, you know, mother of 12, grandmother of over 50, grandchildren, Kanan Hara. My mother was like Iron Woman. Like, she was strong. I don't remember her ever having a cold or a cough. Like, she never spent a night in hospital other than having her babies. Like, it really was like so shocking to us when my mother was diagnosed with a rare form of skin cancer. And, you know, it was a pretty rough journey, to be honest. And thankfully, we were due for long service leave, and we decided to take it and to go to London and really spend quality time with my mother and our family there, which I'll be forever grateful for that time. And it was just such a gift that now I reflect on often and I write about and I hold on to. And during that time when we were in London, you know, I think there was a few things. It was, first of all, we took a pause on life. You know, we, until then, we had been so busy with our shluchas and everything that it's not often you get to just stop and reflect, like, what are we doing? Where are we at? You know, what are our goals? All of that. So there was that sort of time to reflect. And that was also, I guess, strengthened with the fact that I was sitting with my mother who was deteriorating. And there's nothing like when you're sitting with a patient who's really getting closer to their end, like, life becomes crystal clear. All the superficialities melt away. Things that seemed important yesterday don't feel important at all. Everything becomes very, almost like black and white clear. And suddenly it was like, I just felt like, and I said to AC, like, I feel like we could be making such a larger impact. Like, I feel like we've gotten very comfortable. And humans didn't come down here to be comfortable. Like, I know that in general, we're obsessed with being comfortable. I feel like today, humanity is like, you know, we recently got a new car and it's like the amount of like gadgets and settings. This, my kids are telling me the seats go warm and the seats go cold and this goes up and down. And I'm like, this is almost gross with how obsessed we are with making ourselves comfortable. But like, I really think that like humans came down to earth to toil. We came down here to work hard, to get our hands dirty, not to be comfortable. Like, one day you're in heaven, you're comfortable. You're sitting next to God, you're comfortable. When we're down here, we're not meant to be comfortable all the time. And I, like I said, I know that the world, you know, is trying very hard to give us that message to, you know, have a very cushy, comfortable life and make sure you're resting a lot. And but no, 6 days a week we work, the seventh day we rest. Like, most of our lives, we're supposed to be working and toiling. And so I had this feeling, and you know, me and Asa kept talking about it, and then I spoke about it with my mother, and we felt like, you know what, we're ready to make a big move. And it was there that we thought about that Abraham's Tent, you know, was born. I'd say that was where we decided it's time to come, when we come back to Sydney, to open a bigger Chaylim in Sydney. And at the same time, we were like, well, obviously we're going to be in Randwick. There's no Chabad house there, there's not much there. There's Jews living in Randwick, and there's more and more Jews moving out that way. We may as well also have a Chabad house, and let's just try do the two together and let's go for it. And, you know, I want to say two things. First of all, I want to say that, like, when you push yourself for holy work, like, the craziest things happen. Like, you know, people say, like, don't bite off more than you can chew. We bite off more than we can chew every damn day, okay? Even today, like, I'm like, whoa, it's so much. There's just so much on our plates. But, like, you know what happens when you bite off more than you can chew in holy work? You just grow with it. Hashem sends, like, the craziest amount of blessings. Like, I cannot even tell you. I feel like I should write a book just on our 1.5-year journey of Abraham's Tent till now. The support and help Hashem has sent us because we've taken the jump, because we've pushed ourselves and grown with it. If you just stay in your comfort zone, you don't grow. The whole thing is be afraid. I was so afraid. Like, you know, I always thought, like, people who are CEOs and people who start these things are people who, like, you know, they're confident. They're really good. No. She's like a real shlucha. No, they're just people who are ready to be afraid and do it anyway. I can tell you, I was terrified when we started. Like, I would literally, like, get heart palpitations and say to AC, oh my God, like, we're going to fail. We're going to be homeless. We're going to, like, every single, and he would laugh at me because it's so ridiculous. But I promise you, those fears were, like, real. I felt terrified. And it was like, you know what? I'm going to feel the fear and we're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it anyway because no one else is doing it. This is obviously our path. And stop, like ignoring it and escaping it. Like I could see how everything had lined up in our life. Like even my mother being sick, I'll never explain a reason. And, you know, it's very painful and I wish we never had to go through it. But at the end of the day, I can see how all those experiences led me to that. Now when I'm in a hospital room with someone, I can empathize in a way that someone else probably can't who hasn't been in that situation. And we can offer support in ways that only we can because we've been, me and AC have walked this journey. And not to say every journey is the same and, you know, people are different, but there is a certain level of understanding and empathy that we have because we've experienced a very similar challenge. And so that was really where, you know, it all started, it all began. Like I said, I don't think, it's not like it's been all a smooth ride and it's been, you know, everything's worked out perfectly, but I can honestly say that I believe this with everyone. If you push yourself in Advaita Sakadesh, like in seriously holy God's work, it is insane the blessings that come your way. I can say that our life has gotten better in every which way, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in every which way we have been blessed since we took this plunge. And I guess, like, you know, if I had a message, that would be it. Like, we don't have to be comfortable. You don't have to be comfortable. Like, as I sat there watching my mother, I was thinking, like, what's your legacy? What's our legacy? What am I going to leave? You know, we're not going to take the physicality, the materialism with us. One day when, please God, after 120, what is the legacy we're going to leave behind? And I guess looking at my mother, I could see she built a beautiful family and she had such an open home and she had all these things. And I thought to myself, like, what's my legacy going to be? Because, like, now's the time to build that legacy. And all of that, you know, I'm grateful that it became so clear to me while sitting with my mother and while talking to my parents. And my mother was so, both of my parents, but especially my mother, was so encouraging and really believed in me and believed in us. And all of that was what really what led us to, you know, even though my mom eventually passed and I was so broken, but I took that brokenness and I took that pain, and it's still, you know, she's not gone that long, it's still emotional for me, but I took that and I tried to use that to build and to turn that pain into that chaos and pain into meaning and into goodness to help others. And it's not an easy journey, but there's no other journey I'd rather be on. There's no other journey.
Wow, I've got like goosebumps. Do you mind sharing with us some of the like a story or an anecdote of when you really saw Hashem's hand through all your holy work that you have done?
I guess, like, I literally see it daily. I'm trying to think of what's a specific story to share that, like, honestly, like, every week there's story, like, people we meet in the hospital, people who come into our home, that I'm just like, you know, a few weeks back we had, like, a young adult dinner, and we had like quite a few new faces that I didn't know. And generally, like, our Shabbos dinners are made up of a mixture of like Abraham's Tent and Soul Center. So Abraham's Tent, people who, family members of people in hospital or doctors and nurses we've met in hospital or patients that thankfully have gotten better. And also local Randburg Jews or just Jews we've met through Sydney. And it's always like this sort of, you know, chollen of the two. And this one guy, like a 23-year-old anyway, he came to help me serve the soup and we were chatting, and he said to me, is this the main course? Like, is there any courses after this? And so I thought he was joking because, like, you know, if you've ever been to a Jewish home on Friday night, so I was like,
soup is not the main course.
I was like, you haven't been to Shabbos dinner before, have you? Like, totally laughing. He goes, actually, I haven't. And I was like, wow. Because beforehand we had been at Dover Heights, and while that was an incredible shluchas, it was predominantly South African and they had been extremely traditional. So the idea that, like, someone had never had a Shabbos dinner, particularly this boy was born in Israel, had a Hebrew name, like, wow. And anyway, long story short, he lives not too far off from us. He's fully Jewish and Israeli, as I said, and lives with his family. And through some twisted, crazy way how he got to us, basically, like, this was his beginning journey with Yiddishkeit complete. Like, they're completely disconnected from the community. And we meet lots of people like this in the hospital, everything. People who are, you know, not part of, don't go to Jewish schools or shuls, or are not connected with the community. And it's like so often where I'm just like, wow, this is why we're here. this is why we're here. This is why Hashem put us here. Like, literally, I'd say every few days I end up saying that. So I feel like, yeah, it feels very strongly from Hashem that we are where we're meant to be, and that this work is so needed and in this place and this, you know. I forgot what the original question was.
No, you're doing amazing. But the fact that you're helping people physically in their most vulnerable, but really what they really need is that spiritual, emotional, like, hug, tightrope when people are in their most vulnerable. It's not just like giving them food and giving them the physical abilities, the physical things that they're lacking, but the fact that it's you, Sarah, like it could be anyone, but the fact that they have you, someone who understands, who empathizes, who has been through, I can't even imagine, like, the pain and the struggle. And I'm saying, like, a mother is everything. A mother is everything. And the fact that you're able to hold these people's hands and have their strength and their hope, like, especially in Randwick, where it's so needed. Like, I went to university in Randwick, and, like, there are so many Jews around, and there's nothing. There's really nothing for all these. I mean, all you think, everyone says there's 40,000 Jews in Sydney, but everyone thinks, like, all the Jews live right here in, like, Rose Bay. But really, there's a whole group of Jews that have never had that experience, have never had the ability. And I think, like, even in my little experience of being at UNSW, I met so many Jews that have nowhere to go for Shabbos. Do you have university students coming to you?
Yeah, they come for Shabbos, for Yom Tov. Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, when we thought of the name for it, Abraham's Tent, it was very much the idea that, like, when we thought of Avraham and Sarah's tent, it was, you know, travelers were traveling through the desert. They're hot, you know, thirsty, tired, hungry, all of it, right? They came into Avraham and Sarah's tent, and obviously they were nourished physically with beautiful food and tongue and all the delicacies. But besides for that, they were nourished, like, spiritually, emotionally. When people left Avraham and Sarah's tent, they were not the same as when they came in. Avraham and Sarah gave them faith. They gave them food. They gave them warmth and love. And as I said, when they left, it was like they were different people. I think when we thought of the hospital system, we sort of envisioned it like a desert where people are hungry, tired. They are lost. It's such a difficult time for people. And the idea of Abraham's tent was to be that tent, that cocoon of warmth, of safety, of nourishment, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So as you said, like, we offer all those physical services, like medical rides and meals for patients' loved ones and accommodation and, you know, Shabbos kits and all of that, and spiritual support and, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, funerals and, you know, prayers and all those things. But it's holding people in that space. It's being an anchor to Judaism if they want it. And not everyone does. Some people just, you know, want the physical, or just, you know, every family and patient is so different. But a lot of them, as you say, it is the anchor to Judaism. It is the anchor to the community that they either haven't had or have had, but not strong enough. Or, you know, every family's so many different stories. But it's very much, as you said, like, when we get in there, it's very much that anchor of not just physical needs, but that emotional support, that spiritual support. And honestly, I also think of it as, like, sometimes you'll meet in hospital that you would never interact with in life, because they are not opting into any Chabad Hatzis events, any community events. And it's like, it's a Jew in hospital, and I have this opportunity, or my husband has this opportunity, to connect with this Jew that would never connect otherwise with Jews in the community. So it feels like a huge merit and a huge responsibility. And sometimes you only have a few minutes with someone. And so, you know, I always just, like, pray, like, Hashem, give us the right words. Give us whatever we need to touch this person in a way that they know that if they want more and if they're happy to, they can connect further to Yiddishkeit, come for Shabbos dinner, you know, whatever it is that they want. But it's a huge privilege and a huge responsibility. Yeah.
How do you find out if they're Jewish? Do they write it on their hospital forms?
So as chaplains, we get, like, a list of Jewish patients.
Oh, you're an official chaplain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So as chaplains, we get a list of Jewish patients. But aside from that, also, some people don't mark themselves as Jewish for various reasons, either because they're worried about anti-Semitism, or they're just so sort of removed, they see it as irrelevant, or, you know, various reasons. But then we also just people will call or email Abraham's Tent and say, hi, I've got a sister, I've got a cousin, I've got a parent, a friend, whatever. Can you go in and, you know, check in on them, or we're needing this or that? So we get a lot of also just calls or messages of people. And then often we're in the hospital very often, so we'll often meet someone, or even sometimes the hospital calls us and says we have a Jewish patient who needs further support, or, you know, like sometimes even like, you know, one time a few weeks back, it was like midnight and we got a call because there was a Jewish patient who had passed away, and there was no, unfortunately, no close family members. And, you know, they know that there's different protocols for Jewish, how we treat those who have passed. And so, you know, AC sort of went right over. We're luckily so close to the hospital. We're like a 2-minute drive, a 7-minute walk. And he went in there and was able to, you know, give the body the respect it deserved and all that. So, yeah, that's how we basically, and we're hoping over time to build more and more of a presence there. And we do, we go weekly with Shabbos boxes, and there's a number of things we do, but we're hoping to build more and more of a presence that at some point, you know, anyone who's there will know if there's a Jewish patient that there is the support. I do want to say that we also, even though our focus and our passion is the Jewish community, we have also responded to lots of non-Jews as well. We've got like, you know, there's a couple of like Lebanese workers who have, you know, love our Shabbos boxes and our Shabbos treats. I've delivered like holiday boxes around December time to families. And, you know, even the nurses, I see it, you know, we give cookies and gifts to the nurses. I definitely see it as also a responsibility, especially in today's world and today's climate, to make a Kiddush Hashem and to remind these people that we are not evil and we are, you know, a good and kind and decent people. And, you know, we're doing our part to make the world better. And, you know, we've had quite a few comments from nurses like, the Jewish chaplains are really incredible. They always go out of their way. You know, it's just a very different approach. You have sort of non-Jewish chaplains who sit in their offices waiting to be called. And then you have the Jewish chaplains who actively, and it's not just us, there's other Jewish chaplains too, who actively go out looking for the Jews to find them. And so it's just it's a very different approach. And that kind of surprises the nurses and the doctors, and they're sort of like, wow, like, why do you guys do that? Even today, I went with somebody to deliver like gifts to the kids around the Children's Hospital, not just the Jewish kids, all the kids. And somebody was like, what is this? You know, and I was like, well, we're just bringing smiles to the patients. We're just bringing a little bit of joy on a hard day. And she was just like, wow, where are you guys from? And I was like, oh, we're Abraham's Tent. I'm just a Jewish chaplain. And this is my friend Rifki from GEMS. And, you know, and they were just like, the lady was like, the nurse was like, wow. And she was just like, I can't believe it. Wow. You know? And for us, it's like, it doesn't seem that wild. It doesn't seem that crazy, right? It just seems like,
this is what we do.
Exactly. Like, it's not that crazy. But like, I guess the approach is so different. And, you know, that's what we are as Jews. You know, we're a nation of rachamim, of mercy. And that's, you know, when people are in a tough spot, we want to make it better. We want to make it easier. And we're not the doctors. We're not the nurses. We're certainly not God. But we can make our little impact in making that challenge a little easier.
Wow. I also think that you said like especially nowadays, I think I was just at this amazing opportunity. I was in Italy for 2 weeks, like doing a job, like on a retreat, and I met so many non-Jews. And like the nature of my work is that I'm usually around Jews, and I'm in my little Jewish bubble. I love my Jewish bubble, so I'm okay with it. But it was so fascinating. And obviously, like, you tell them you're Jewish, you tell them you're in Israel, and it's inevitable, it will come up. Like, yeah. It's the sense of, it's a political beating heart in the nature of the world today. And I realized that people were making comments, and sometimes they made comments that I didn't agree with. And I made like a promise to myself, and that was that my job is just to show them what it means to be a Jew. Like, just to be a good, kind, cute person. Like, I want them to leave and be like, oh, that girl was really nice. So, like, they're going to see the news, and they're going to see IDF soldiers. They're not going to see us as Nazis. Like, we are just, I know, like, when the news accuses IDF soldiers of doing this and this and that, I'm like, I know soldiers. Like, I know Chayalim. I chill with them. They're not like that. I know them personally. And when you know a Jew, when you understand a Jew, then like your whole perception changes. So I think it's remarkable that you walk around the hospital in a non-Jewish, predominantly non-Jewish environment, and you're like, this is what a Jew means. Like, Orla Gaya means to be a light upon the nation. Just to me, means to be a good, kind, normal person. And they see you and they're like, oh, Jew, Sarla, not, I don't know what they think we are these days.
That's right.
It's so powerful.
I agree. I think that, yeah, when you don't know something, it's easy to believe all this. But when you actually know somebody is Jewish, it's like, well, I don't know if I can believe that all Jews are fill in the blanks, because I actually know some Jews and they're really decent people. So, yeah, I agree with you. We've got to be an example, and we're held to a very high standard. And that's because, you know, we've also been given a very high mission. And so they're right to hold us to a high standard. And, you know, that's something that I tell my kids in general, like, walking around Randwick with yarmulkes and tzitzis, there's nobody else in Randwick with yarmulkes and tzitzis, you know? And I tell my kids, like, even sometimes the boys, you know, one of them gives a kick or a punch, and I'm like, listen, you want to do that at home, that's one thing, but just remember, when you walk through the streets of Randwick and somebody sees that, like, you represent Jews, you represent Chabad, you represent the Rebbe, you know? I'm not saying they're kids and they're going to behave like kids, but it is something to be conscious of, and I don't think it's a bad thing to be conscious of. I think you end up living like a higher vibration, like in a higher way because of that. And that's good for us, you know?
Yeah, it's so important. There's one thing you were speaking about, is like being uncomfortable and fear and all that. And I think so many people don't accomplish things. Like, I can say for myself, there are so many things that I should do that I haven't done because I'm scared, because it's scary to take the first step. How did you even like wrap your head around walking into such creating a foundation? Like, it was never done before. There's probably so much bureaucracy, there's probably so many people you have to speak to, and it takes a lot of confidence to go into these like hospitals where there are all these like official, I don't know what it's like, but I know that I would be shaking. What pushed you? How did you actually get yourself to put yourself in that situation? And like, what are the protocols? How does somebody actually get themselves to like leave their little comfort zone, step right out and be like, I'm going to create an organization, I'm making an impact? Only been 2 years and I feel like I'm just at the beginning. I feel like if I interviewed you in like 3 years time, you're going to tell me about, I don't know, another 100 things that you've accomplished. So if you could walk us through how we could really take some practical tips.
Right. So the first thing I want to say is the fear is not an indication not to do it. Like, I think it's the Yetzirah's lie. Like, it makes up these stories. I'll never forget once I was driving and I felt like, I've never had a panic attack, so I don't know, but I felt like I was almost going to have a panic attack. Like, my heart was beating. I felt like this hot sweat and I was like, oh my God, what are we doing? What are we doing? Why are we doing this? Like, why? I'm very comfortable. I like my life. Like, what was I thinking? You know? And I just remember I literally pulled over and I did like a few breaths, you know, in and out. And I was like, hold on, let me pull this apart. Like, is this true fear or is this Yetzirah just trying to talk me out of something really good? Because obviously if you're going to do something powerful and good, the Yetzirah is going to come out in full force. And I was like, okay, what are the fears? And that day it was like, we're going to be homeless. I'm like, that's not reality. That's lies. Like, what do you mean you're going to be homeless? Okay, we're going to fail at everything. How could you fail at everything? Are you going to fail at a few things? Yeah, probably. The same way we've failed at things in the past. But how am I going to fail at everything? And I slowly started to like pull apart the fears. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh my God, this is Yetzirah. I was like, you are such a liar. Like, and there was a song when we were kids. I don't know if you had it here, but it was like, Yetzirah, stop picking on me. Anyway, I just remember I like sang that to myself and I pulled off and I drove and I called AC and I was laughing and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I've become a crazy person. And I told him about it, but we laughed because as soon as I was like, no, like a little bit of fear is great because guess what? That fear makes you do things properly and makes you have a plan and make, you know, you don't want to have no fear. That's like a little worrying. Are you going to actually do what you want to do? But when you're feeling that enormous fear, like try to face it and question it and pull it apart. And, you know, as I said, a little bit of fear is very healthy. So I think the first thing is facing the fear and don't take the fear as an indication that you're not meant to be doing it. If there's a lot of fear, it probably is your role. It probably is your path. That's number one. Number two, if you feel like life kind of keeps leading you somewhere, and you're thinking like other people should be doing it, or why doesn't someone, like the ideas come around a few times. It's sort of like, you know, you keep noticing it. It's like Hashem helps you notice the problems in this world. then they're for you to fix. If you keep seeing it, then maybe it's time for you to stand up and fix it.
Yeah, you're saying someone else is, that'd be a great idea for someone.
Exactly. But guess what? Like, it keeps coming up. You're noticing it. Other people are not noticing that issue. Well, maybe it's your little piece of the earth to fix then, you know? The other thing I'd say is like to really try sit down and create a vision. Like for me, I'm very visual. Like that's my just best way of learning and remembering things and all that. And so I actually was like, okay, what do I envision? Like, what would my Shabbos table look like? And it was like, I envisioned having this blended Shabbos table of local Jews from the Soul Center and Abraham's Tent hospital people and at one Shabbos table together. And one guy saying to the other, hi, I'm Max. You know, I live nearby. This, that. Oh, hey, my dad's in the hospital. Like, I literally envisioned that. And I cannot tell you how many weeks it happens. And I'm like, I say, like, AC, this was our dream. Like, it happened. Like, I'm still shocked that it happened. I feel like, how did that happen? But it did. Like, you know, and AC had his own visions. I mean, obviously, a lot of them were shared. But, like, try to actually envision it, like, physically see it, what you imagine it to be. Because when you do, it's not so vague and you can work towards that. You know what I'm saying? The other thing is we did a lot of research. Like we flew to Melbourne and we met, like Melbourne has a beautiful organization there, Beit Raphael, that does like very similar. The only difference there is it's not a Chabad organization. So like the whole Shluchas piece is not sort of part of that. And they were sort of very skeptical about that part for us. And they were like, you know, don't go in and make anyone try put the filling on people who don't want it. We're like, don't worry, like we're not shoving Judaism on anyone. Obviously you have to be sensitive and kind, but for us it's like, as Chabad shluchim, like there's no way we're not going to bring our shluchas there, like no way, you know. But we did a lot of research, we called a lot of people, we sat with people who had spent a lot of time in hospital, we met with doctors and nurses, and just we tried to sort of like do market research to figure out what it was exactly that people were missing, what they needed. The other thing is like, we also try to do it, and this was just like a policy between us, in the most like shalom way. So anyone who was already involved in the hospital, we were like, approach them first, didn't want to tread on toes, didn't want to, this is what we're thinking, are you happy with that? We're happy to work with you. You know, there wasn't like tremendous support, but there was a very sort of basic level of support there with an organization that already existed. And we said, we want to work with you. We're not looking to, we want to add to what there is. We're not looking to take away. We're not looking to double up on what already exists in the community. So there was a lot of that, also partnership with organizations that already exist in Sydney and strengthening those partnerships and getting into a hospital room and realizing, you know, somebody needs something and that organization already exists in Sydney. Like there's something called Mum for Mum, for example, and they support like mothers in the first year. And so if we get into a room and we see that there's, you know, a new mother who's really struggling, can really use that support, well, I'll be her connection. I'll contact Mum for Mum, or I'll tell her about Mum for Mum and connect the two so that she can have that support. And there's lots of organizations like that in Sydney. We have Jewish House and Jewish Care and lots of amazing organizations. So, you know, I'd say you definitely want to have a plan. You definitely want to have a vision. But at the same time, I think just, you know, stay focused, have your goals. Like, you know, we thought like we'd get everything set up in a day. Things took time. Hashem makes you really humble. You got to work hard. You got to keep pushing. You got to keep hustling. Don't be afraid of hard work. Don't be afraid of the fear. You know, all those fears that come up, you know, we're never going to get there. We're not going to manage it. You know, in Melbourne, they have four apartments across four hospitals. That's okay. I'm not on Melbourne's journey. I'm on our journey. You know, you don't have to compare yourself against other people. Compare yourself against you a year ago. Compare yourself against you 3 years ago. And that's what you want to compare yourself to. As long as you're growing and evolving and you're moving towards your goals, that's okay. Every city and country and organization has their own journey. And if I start comparing to other people's, then that's when I get anxious. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they've already done that. And that Chabad house is already, yeah, but that's not us. That's not our journey. Hashem's not telling you like, you have to be like so-and-so, you know, like the famous story. He's going to ask me, not going to ask me why I'm not like Zusha. You know, why aren't you the best you? And that's like what I have to remind myself when I get into that, like, oh my gosh, you know, big shluchim do that. Huge bikur chaylems do that. No, that's not my journey. This is our journey. And as long as we're moving forward and evolving and growing and, you know, heading that way, that's, we're good with that.
Wow. And it's like, you never had started an organization before. Like this was the first.
No, but I'm lucky because AC is very good with like I don't know, like forms. Like forms give me anxiety.
Oh, I don't like forms.
Like, oh, we're lucky in the way that we complement each other. You know, I love people and social and meeting new people. Like that, like fills me, you know, like, you know, some people are like, you invite them for Shabbos and they're like, oh, who else is coming? And they hear someone familiar is coming. They're like happy. For me, it's like, are there new people coming? I love that. I love meeting people, different kinds of people. Like it's fascinating to me and that like fills me. So I love that side of it. AC's more introverted. He's okay with it, but he doesn't love like necessarily the people side of it. But he really, he has like an artistic brain. He's very creative. He loves like all the behind the scenes stuff. And like randomly, like building websites. Like I can't think of something worse. He loves that. And like logos and designs and like, you know, there's just so many elements like that. So I guess we're very blessed in that way that Hashem brought us together and we have very different strengths and very different weaknesses. And as long as we keep doing that, I think we both feel full and are able to do what we can do. At the same time, there's also lots of things like, you know, we asked advice and we called people and we called people who we felt like could be mentors who already had built up organizations. And don't be afraid to ask. Like, you know what? I'm always someone, if I need directions, I ask. Like, I'm not going to just fumble around, you know? You're still going to fumble around because your journey is never going to be exactly like someone else's. But what you can ask, go for it. And, you know, in the hospital system, meeting people, asking, trying, you know, have a little chutzpah, you know? Go there and say, you know, we said we want to have a cupboard downstairs in the main lobby for the Jewish community. What do you mean? Like, then this one's going to ask and that one's going to ask. Yeah, you're right. They'll all ask and they all deserve to have it. But we're here for the Jewish community. And guess what? A few months later, it's approved. Now we can put a cupboard downstairs with kosher food and Chol of Yisrael milk. Wow. And, you know, Shabbos boxes and Sidurim and all that stuff. And in Mirtz Hashem, one day we'll have a room there. And, you know, we've got big visions and just keep pushing towards them. Don't listen to the Yetzer Hara. Don't listen to the negative voices in your head. Or listen to them and then laugh with it. You know, it's okay. You know what? You got to just keep pushing and be a little crazy and face those fears. And it's scary, but do it anyway. Feel the fear and face it anyway. Like the fear is not an excuse. The fear just holds you back. It's just a Yetzer Hara. Don't give into it. Don't give into it. Feel it and do it anyway. I'm telling you, imagine me driving down the street and feeling that physical sensation through my body. The fear was like a physical feeling. And it's okay. It's okay. You'll be okay.
Wow. I could totally imagine myself being scared to ask them even like, is it okay for the cupboard? It's like, no, we're getting a cupboard. This is what's happening.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. And like, even like fundraising, like that scares me. That is scary. I'm my hat's off to you, Sarala.
No, sorry, I really don't like that piece, but there is something I try to remember and I try to say to myself and tell other people, and I genuinely believe it, that a lot of people are not able to do this work, either because they're involved in different matters or it's just not their thing. When they give a dollar towards it, they actually share a physical piece in Ashluchas and in all this work. And it's very holy work. You want to have a piece of it. You really do. So when we offer for people to share, like that's their way of holding a piece in our shulchan, of literally sharing a merit in all the work that goes down in the hospital. And as I said, most people don't have that opportunity. So like, I really feel like, you know, yes, it's a gift that they enable us to do it and they give us money, but we're also sharing that gift of them having a merit and having a physical piece in all our shulchan. So, you know, it's still not easy for me. And I feel like, you know, in a way it's good. It keeps us humble and it keeps you, you know, it keeps you, yeah, humble. I can't think of a better word. It really does, because neither me or my husband like fundraising. But at the end of the day, it's part of what you got to do to do it. And, you know, there's some parts of the job we love and there's some parts we don't love. And you keep doing that because that's part of doing a good job, you know?
But objectively, who wouldn't want to give? It's not even about the fact, like, I'm sure I want to give. Everyone wants to give to Abraham's 10. It's not like you don't want to be a part of it. It's like, but from the person starting the organization's perspective, it's all those fears that stop you, I guess, from feeling confident in your organization and who you are. Like, you are a normal person, Sarah, I know, but you're very much on, like, the superwoman. It takes a lot of superhuman strength to really overcome and really push through. And the only way to actually achieve greatness, like you said, is being uncomfortable, but tapping into that infinite part of ourselves, that part of ourselves that don't give in to the bureaucracy and the little no's. It's like pushing forward. It's like, I see the image, I see the vision, and I want to be a part of that. So you're definitely one of those super, and you have four kids. So.
But I think there's also one big, huge piece of it as well that, like, I remind myself. First of all, like, I feel like we represent the Rebbe, and when we have, you know, hurdles, or even not, just every so often, we'll write to the Rebbe, we'll share what's happening. Like, I also am like, you're in this with us. Like, you're also a partner here. So, like, when we are struggling, and when we're, you know, we were trying to get an apartment for months and months and it just wasn't happening, and I'm like, this is not for us. I'm not looking for a new apartment. We're quite comfortable where we're living. Like, Rebbe, we need help. Like, help us get an apartment. And, like, I feel like also because we represent the Rebbe, and because as Jews, as Hashem's chosen nation, we do carry, like, superpowers. We do. Like, I feel like when we're going there, I'm not coming as Sarah Abrahams. I'm coming as a shlucha of the Rebbe. I'm coming as a child of Hashem. And with that power, this crazy stuff happens. Like, I don't feel like it's like, as you say, oh, because I'm, you know, got these superpowers. I feel like it's because of who we represent. And as long as we're connected to that and reminded of that, like, infinity and beyond, you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
Yeah, for real. Like, sometimes I have to remind myself that I might fall out of alignment. But once I remind myself who, like, our messenger is and who we represent, like, I have zero doubt we can literally do anything.
I think it's such a powerful message. Like, as Jewish people, we're so little and we're so small in many ways, and we're such a minority. We're like the smallest minority on the planet. I don't think anyone realizes how we're 0.02% of the population. But yet when we connect to Hashem and we recognize and that we have a Rebbe, that we are part of something so much bigger. I mean, today's Yom Yerushalayim, just the fact that we got back Jerusalem, like, it's not normal. These things that we've experienced in our lives, in our short lives of being Jews on this planet for the past 4,000 years, we have accomplished insane things, and people don't understand it. It's because I'm not here as Hanan, you're not here as Sarala. I'm here as a Jew, and that is so much bigger than me.
So powerful.
And that's the only way we'll get through anything in life, is realize that you're part of a collective and you're an ambassador, quite literally a chaplain. Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a ceremony to be a chaplain?
It's not a ceremony, but you've got to do a hell of a lot of paperwork, and you've got to do a course. There's quite a lot of, like, yeah, a lot of bureaucracy and stages, but it's not like there's no ceremony per se, but there was a lot of hoops you have to jump through to become a chaplain, which, fair enough. I think the hospital has to make sure that you are the right kind of person if you're going to be going into patients at their very worst.
For sure.
Yeah.
One thing that really inspires me is that you and AC are really a team. Did you know that, like, when you were 19, 20, however old you were, did you know that you and AC were going to work together and be a team? Was that something that you thought about?
I don't think I thought about it before. Like, you know, I remember, like, thinking, like, different things about him before. Like, you know, I loved that he was really good with, like, kids and things like that. I don't think I ever thought about working together particularly. But I did, like, say it many times over the years, even at Dover Heights. I'm like, you know, I'm pretty grateful that we could work together and we still kind of like each other. I will say that it's like a work in progress in terms of, like, you know, sometimes we could work together all day and then you're parenting and then you have to still like take the time out and be like, okay, now we're taking time out as a couple. Like, we're not workmates right now. We're not parenting. We're taking time out to nourish our relationship, because you could feel like you spend a lot of time, and which is great, but like, that time is not necessarily focused on just being together and your marriage and relationship. You know what I mean? It's more about, you know, your work goals and your parenting goals. And so that's something that is important to us, and something that, like, is always a work in progress of, like, even if we've worked together all day or whatever, let's try just get out for a drive or a drink or something and focus on just, like, being together without any of our work or kids or life, and just being, like, as husband and wife in a relationship. So I'm very grateful that we could work together, and, you know, like, I'm kind of crazy and AC super calm, and we, you know, balance each other. And that's a gift. I think that's just a gift from Hashem, whether you can or you can't. And if you can't, it doesn't mean you can't accomplish incredible things. It just means maybe your shluchas is something more individual as opposed to a team. You know, I don't feel like it's anything we've particularly done that's, you know, landed us in that way. That's just the way Hashem's set it up for us.
Wow. And how do you balance it with like your kids and school pickups? And I'm saying there are so many people are just struggling to live. Like you said that people don't want, people are trying to be comfortable. I think like it's so hard to be comfortable. Life is hard just breathing and being and functioning, never mind running an entire organization and changing the world. So how do you find that balance?
I think it's always hard for women. That's my opinion. The work mom balance. I think no matter the job you do, I feel like there's always that like pull and tug, you know? I think that I constantly remind myself that my kids are my first shluchas. Like before anything is my kids. And, you know, I'm looking at the clock now, even thinking like, I have to leave very soon. We got pickup, you know? You know, I'm grateful also that AC is very hands-on. So between us, it's like, the kids are part of the shluchas. The kids help us. Okay, they don't go into the hospitals and see sick people, but like the kids very much like are setting the table for Shabbos and talking to guests and helping us plan what the Purim theme should be and helping us pack Shabbos boxes. And, you know, the kids have to be part of the shluchas and plan. Otherwise, it could feel like two completely different baskets. I think that they need to be part of the plan. At the same time, I think it's a constant woman struggle. I always feel like, you know, have I given this one enough? And, oh, he needs a little more. But I feel like that's just also a mother's...
mom guilt.
Yeah, like Jewish mom guilt. Like, you're always like that anyway, you know, kind of thinking about this one. And what does that one need? And what is, you know, that one seems like they need a little more or a little this or that. You know, that's just part of, I think, mothering in general. And I think it's a powerful... like life lesson for me to give to my kids, that you can be a great parent or a work in progress, as I like to say, and also achieve big things and big goals. And, you know, even recently my son had his bar mitzvah, and it was like, you know, hearing him talk about what he wants to be when he grows older and how he wants to be a big shliach. And, you know, and I'm like, wow, like I never actually asked him what his vision is, or, you know, but he's looking at us and he's like, hey, I can be a mom or a dad, and I can be this, and I can be that. And I think there's no greater message to give our kids. Like, you can be everything you want to be. I'm not saying it's not going to be hard, and there's going to be some days where you feel like, oh, you know, maybe I've got to pull back on the work and pull forward on the parenting, or some days pull back on the parenting. And, you know, it's a constant work in progress and a constant balance. And I don't know if anyone's ever figured that out. And if you know someone who has, I'd love to talk to them. But I think... you know, it's a great lesson for our kids to grow up with. And I also think that, like, I'm open to hearing, like, you know, if one of my kids would bring it up with me or is like, you know, I need, like, they don't actually say straight out, I need time with you. But if they would say something like that, I would try my hardest to honor that and to give that. If we feel like the kids are a little bit like, you know, not neglected, but like maybe it's been a very busy week and whatever, like we'll try to do a quieter Shabbos that week to nourish the family. So I think like the family needs to be the focal point, but they're not completely separate from the shluchas. They are part of it, but they're the core. And if the family's not okay, then nothing else will be okay. So it needs to be in alignment, but it's a, I guess, constant work in progress. I can't say I feel like I've got it totally figured out. Some days I feel like I'm winning, and some days... We're learning, we're growing, you know?
I think it's the mom guilt. I think we always think that we need to be better, we need to do more. But I think the fact that your son told you that when he grows up, he wants to be a big shliach, I think you're doing an amazing job.
Thank you.
If your kid wants to be just like you. So finally, I feel really inspired. So I want to know how we can help everyone who's listening. I'm sure they all want to be a part of your amazing shluchas. So how can we all help build this amazing organization that's so needed in our community?
So I think just two things. First thing is like word of mouth, sharing about it. The more people know about it, firstly, they know that then the support exists, because we're still only a year and a half old. Some people don't even know about us yet. So just share it with people. You know, did you hear about this Abraham's Tent? You know, it supports patients and the family members. They're now at Randwick, soon they're expanding to St. Vincent's and then other hospitals. The vision is to that one day a Jew anywhere in Sydney will never be alone. They'll be in every hospital, you know, exist in every hospital. So that's firstly. Share the word, spread the word, all of that. The second thing is volunteering. We have lots of opportunity for volunteering. Like, one big thing that comes to mind is medical rides. Volunteers drive to and from. We're getting lots of requests, lots of people, elderly, young people, people going to cancer appointments and all sorts of appointments, and they really could use a warm community member to drive them. It's such a difference than having just an Uber driver. It really can make such a difference. We've had some incredible stories with that as well. So sign up, go on our website, sign up, volunteer. There's so many opportunities. And the third is donate. When, like I said, when you donate, you share a piece in it. You share a piece in this holy work. You help us help more people. Our organization is abrahamstent.org.au. And yeah, reach out, say hello. I would love to hear from you guys, hear feedback. And I think that's pretty much it.
Thank you so much, Zaira. Such an honor to have you. I wish you, Hashem, just give you an AC, an Abraham's Tent, your amazing kids, so much bracha. May you see the fruits of your labor. May you actually see that all the hard work, your fingers are probably full of dirt for all the seeds that you've sown. And may you just see so much bracha. Al pi shtayim in return. Thank you for everything.
Thanks so much, Hannah.
Thanks for being here.
It's such a pleasure.